All right, you guys ready for some fun?
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to this panel. We are delighted to share with each of you some of our real-world experience with selling and managing change today. I'm Gina Montgomery, and I'm the Vice President of Corporate Strategy for Connection, which is a Microsoft NSP. And I deal with selling and managing change every day, especially since I've had to build and continually manage our cloud services practice. So with that said, I'd like to introduce our panelists.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Steve Nguyen. I'm a Yammer product evangelist with Microsoft.
Hello, I am Naomi Moneypenny. I am the Chief Technology Officer at Many Worlds, based out of Austin, Texas, and very excited to talk to you about selling and managing change. I really am. It's one of our key skill sets. So.
Thank you. My name is Brian Levinson, and I'm a product marketing manager for Office 365.
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much for those quick intros. So let's start with the idea of selling change at the top. It's a skill set that every IT pro needs. So I'd really like to hear from you with your experiences. What's worked so far? Who'd like to kick it off?
I can go ahead and get started. I'm holding the microphone. So, you know, in my experience, and I am a product marketing manager currently, formerly for a couple of years, I worked as a technical account manager, working with large enterprise customers that were rather new to the cloud and using new technologies for Microsoft. And, you know, really what we often ran into was, how do we talk to our executives, you know, when I was working with IT pros, about why we should be making some of these changes? Why should we upgrade our system? Why should we migrate to the cloud or take on new technologies? And many times we thought of it, you know, amongst our little V team as the technology itself. But ultimately what we really determined worked the best was really to talk about functionality, but not from a perspective of what is the feature, but how can we enable the business? So to our CIOs, to our CEOs, CFOs, what is the return on investment that we're going to get, not just as an investment in this technology or this hardware, but really how are we enabling collaboration? How are we enabling productivity? How can we better meet our customers' needs? And our customers being, of course, my customers' customers, and our IT customers as not just our users, but our business. How do we enable the business by using this technology? And taking that approach, we were really able to have much, much more success by not focusing on exactly what project we were doing, but what we were able to deliver to the company's business itself.
So before I answer in terms of executives, I'd just like to know a little bit about who's in the room. So if you consider yourself an IT pro and you work at IT itself as a department, would you put up your hand? So. See you guys? Okay, great. Anybody who regards themselves as IT decision maker, maybe even one of those executives that we have to try to extract some money from occasionally. Okay, all right, great. And then anybody else who regards themselves maybe more of a business IT person, maybe an end user influencer? Okay, great. It's great to know. So I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. So it's good to talk about this stuff. So from an executive perspective specifically, and with Brian on this in terms of understanding what it means to your business, I think one of the biggest opportunities we have now with technology is to really make an impact in what we can do actually with the top line growth inside of our business. And the message that we have to have in terms of IT so that we can really position what we want to do as being a growth engine for the company. And so traditionally, we've been always a little bit scared, I think maybe a little bit reserved. And I'm just going to speak from my experiences here and keep it very real, in terms of having to be kind of on the back foot with IT because you're scared basically of getting cost cuts and more because people don't understand stuff. So my boss, who was the CIO at Royal Dutch Shell, has an expression of that which executives don't understand, they make smaller. Okay, and I think we've all been through that, right? So it's kind of those aspects. So if an executive doesn't understand what value it is that you're bringing inside of the organization, you, your department, your process, your project that you're working on, it's really important to understand how we can reframe that in terms of what it means for growth for the business. So a lot of that is also capping the downside, right? It's also understanding what it is that we can do from an IT perspective of mitigating the risk for folks. And so it's really difficult, I think, in this cloud services type of world to say, okay, which one of these cloud services is a really good bet, right? Mm-hmm. We can bet with Microsoft, we can bet with a vendor strategy, but that's really not helping us to cap all of the downside. What we really want to understand is what is the regret if we make this move or if we change something. So we want to show both of those pictures, right? We want to show the growth picture of how it's contributing to the business, how you can actually make some top line growth happen as part of it, but you also want to understand about how do I cap that downside. And so we want to, you know, the CYA type of strategy always has to be there too, right? Does it sound like your experiences? I need you guys to interact, you know, because we are here, right?
Yeah, speaking of interaction, we do have some questions canned, but please come to the microphone. If something comes up, we want this to be a session to help you all, too, so don't hesitate. I'm going to get a little bit tactical in my response. Don't underestimate the power of a little bit of hand-holding, and especially hand-holding with regards to the people that are closest to executives and leaderships, and those are the admin executive, the admins. I was working with a company, and the admin was trying to figure out how to better work with her executive, with her CEO, and they were trying to get prepared for a board meeting. And so just real quick, step back. My experience comes from having been a customer success manager for Yammer and with Office 365, so really helping customers with adoption of Yammer and of Office 365. And so what we did was we sat down with the admin, we sat down with her and kind of showed her as we were rolling out OneDrive and as we were rolling out Office 365, just exactly how powerful collaborating within Office 365 and sharing documents, sharing them in place, not emailing attachments, all those simple things that we all kind of take for granted, showing her the power of those things and showing how she can do those things with her CEO, with other members of her executive team. And so we sat down with her, then we sat down with the CEO, we showed them both how to start sharing files, collaborating on documents, using Office 365 and using OneDrive, then they're off and running. And so after that point, they started using OneDrive for sharing all of their board documents and getting prepared for their board documents. They didn't have to download, they have to email them back and forth. It was a much more seamless process. So get in their face, get hands-on with them, really hold their hand. Another thing is with Yammer, a lot of times people say, how do I get executives on board with Yammer? And kind of back to what these guys are saying, it's not really about the shiny object. Yammer's great, it's kind of, it's got a nice interface for people to use, but you think about YouTube. YouTube is nothing without the cat videos and the dogs on skateboards, right? It's really about the content. And that's what I try to impress upon people with Yammer, is it's really about the content. And as community owners, one tactic that you can do to get executives on board is having an understanding of what's top of mind for them, what's important to them, what are the buttons that they're trying to press within their organization. Maybe it's a cost-cutting measure, maybe there's an innovation campaign, maybe they're trying to come up with new ideas. Seed conversations within Yammer about those types of things, and then point your leadership to those conversations. Then it's not about Yammer anymore, it's about whatever topic that's top of mind for them.
Guys, do you have more?
I would just add, I think what Steve was sharing is a really great approach and kind of ties into the storytelling aspect of it, which is, you know, Yammer as a solution or whatever the solution may be, it's great. There are probably other solutions that are maybe comparable or similar, and rather than focusing on the cost to move to it, it's what can we do with this? What are the stories and experiences that we can deliver? And that really then drives the adoption and the really excitement around it. I think what Steve was mentioning where kind of seeding stories, starting to build up that community. I think maybe we'll even start to talk about how we encourage people to take advantage of some of the new technology and the change, the innovation. But that really is crucial to it, is building up excitement around what you're seeking to achieve.
That's great. Building that enthusiasm will take you places with those executive meetings. Thanks, guys. Let's go ahead and take a step out from the executive level. Can you give us some tips on how to gain that traction with some of the stakeholders and influencers in the org?
So I have some sort of tips that I like to share around this, because one of the things we're really experiencing kind of in this networked companies that we have these days is it's really not just one person's decision, right? Everybody has this consensus building opportunity. And so we have to sort of influence people and kind of, you know, I have one company that I work with, they call it snaking, basically, where you go up and you talk to people and you talk to them individually and then you talk to them as a group and you keep building out that sort of consensus network. And so it's one of those opportunities inside of your organization is to think about how we do that from an IT perspective. And so we want to make sure that we have obviously those friends of IT, right, in the business units and who we're interacting with. But we also want to look very carefully at who's driving process change inside of the organization. Because oftentimes those are the people we want to really connect with inside of our companies. And they may be folks that maybe never actually come and talk to IT about anything. And so I would encourage you guys to reach out to the folks who maybe are building processes. They may have the project management process. They may have HR processes. They may be running processes inside of engineering or research, and look for those stakeholders there, because those are the people who are trying to put in methodologies like Lean Thinking or Six Sigma, and really look at them in terms of continuous improvement. What can you do for continuous improvement? And we know that IT can keep delivering on that over and over again. So one of the areas to build opportunities for stakeholders is really in that space. If you can connect it much more into what it is that people understand you can drive inside of the business, then you have that opportunity to influence that network of people who actually are trying to drive change inside of the company.
Snaking might sound like a HR violation, but... have you ever heard of the kind of green dot, yellow dot, red dot analogy? Anybody? A few people? Okay. So this is the analogy I use, and I'm all about kind of building coalitions, kind of like that. This is kind of similar. But a lot of times as change agents, so if you think about kind of those three factions of people, you have the green dots, the yellow dots, and the red dots. The green dots are people that will kind of easily come along with you. They're early adopters, they're quick followers. There's the red dots. These are the people that always are putting up a hand and saying, no, I don't have time for that, or always coming up with some sort of excuse. Then there's the yellow dots. They're kind of the people in the middle. They can kind of go one way or the other. They're kind of malleable, right? A lot of times as change agents, we feel like, let's try to change those red dots. Let's get those people to come with us. And we burn a lot of energy trying to get those red dots to come with us. Instead, what I think is a better approach is those red dots, they're going to come along at their own speed. So don't focus so much time on the red dots, but focus on the green dots. Get those people excited. Get those people on board with you. Help those people bring more yellow dots, so kind of the greenish yellow dots. Help bring those people along with you. And then that'll start to convince some more red dots to eventually come along. A lot of times people have spent, like I remember one time I spent so much energy convincing one red dot to come along. And the person finally came, but I was like, oh, I'm just exhausted after doing that. And so you'll get a lot more energy out of finding people that are going to come along with you, are going to support your efforts. So kind of think of people in those terms.
I would also add that knowing your audience, of course, is always critical. But I think at Microsoft, I think probably throughout the industry, we tend to focus on the specific solution. You know, maybe it's Exchange or SharePoint or Yammer. Rather, it's what can we do to further the finance department? How can we help meet the HR department's needs? And focusing on some of those solutions for the organization, that also actually then ties back into some of the executive support oftentimes. If you have an organization within the business that says, we really need a solution to make file sharing easier. Our current file shares, maybe they're not accessible off the network or whatever it may be, they're kludgy, or whatever the issue may be, people will often go out and start to find their own solutions, which then can be very difficult for IT to manage or even violate compliance requirements. But rather, if you can provide the solutions, make things easier for people, and then really, like everyone else is saying, build that consensus and start to not even necessarily drive pressure internally, but recognize we have a need for this. Let's go out and solve this together. And kind of, you know, within the IT organization, one of the big shifts that I've been seeing over the past couple of years is a pretty interesting transition from managing infrastructure to almost being more of business consultants, technology consultants to your business departments, HR, finance, product development, whatever it may be, that helps make their job easier. If you can make their life easier, that's really where we start to see the greatest adoption, the least friction, and even the most support. And it just everyone tends to have a much more positive experience in that way.
A great point. I think it is about building that. I just wanted to pick this example here. This happened just a few minutes ago on Twitter, where I was thanking Jeff Tepper about something about SharePoint and groups sort of sites coming together, right? You may have seen some of those announcements if that's a relevant technology for you. And Jeff Tepper is a corporate vice president, right, at Microsoft. So you think if anybody would have the power to do something, right, then it would be him, right? Because, you know, they're the corporate vice president. And then he writes me back and he says, you know, I said, you know, it's great that, you know, a lot of people were involved, obviously, in terms of this example. And he said, but it takes courage to put these things together and try to architect something for the future. And then he writes back and says, well, selling, begging, nagging, and just doing it, right? All legitimate examples of leadership. So I would encourage you, sell, beg, nag, right? And just do it, right? That's part of it too.
Thanks, Naomi. While we're still talking about selling change, are there any questions out there? We really encourage you to get up to the mics if you have one.
Don't be shy.
You have to come toward the mics. Yeah.
You have to walk.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. So I'm approaching this actually from a salesperson's perspective, where we're trying to, you know, move the companies forward to accept the change. And one of the limitations that I'm often frustrated with is not the total pushback, we're not doing it, but the okay, we'll do something, but such a tight ring that it's not big enough to accomplish the value. So they're trying to stay safe, one toe in the water. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so that's, I'm interested just to hear some talk about that.
I think as IT, we've gotten caught in this unfortunate kind of terminology around the term pilot. I think it's often easy, excuse me, for IT organizations to say, let's kick the tires, let's try it out, let's do a little pilot. I'm using air quotes for the recording. And the challenge I think that happens with that is that psychologically, users have gotten caught in this pilot tailspin where they're like, oh, here's another fleeting technology that's coming by. They're going to experiment on me. And it may, at the end of this pilot, somebody's going to make a decision. It's going to be go or no go, and whatever I contribute is going to be gone, right? In today's world, what we're really trying to do within our organizations, and if you really what you see what Office 365 is trying to do, is really build a network within your organization. And I think Yammer is a big part of helping to build networks within your organizations. And in order to build a network is only good as the number of nodes that are in it. The number of nodes, whether that be people, or in the case of, it could be content, like resources or documents that people are putting into it. A network is only as good as the number of nodes and resources that are available to it. So I think we got to kind of change the language about how we talk about what a pilot is and how people, how you introduce new technology into an organization, because it's not about just trying something. Because if you think about the first time the phone was rolled out, Alexander Graham Bell only had one other person to call, and there wasn't much value in the phone after that. Same thing with email. Email wasn't very valuable until more people had access to it. So what we try to encourage is, kind of rolling it out to a large enough number of people where you can start to see that value of building the network and the contributions that a network can have. So instead of calling things pilots, instead what I recommend is calling them phases. Because generally if you call something phase one, people think, oh, there's probably a phase two. I know one company, they called it waves, and they said they called them waves because they said you can't stop a wave. So this is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart. I wrote a blog post about this called Your Enterprise Social Pilot is Already Doomed. So you can look that up, and I have a blog post about that if you're interested.
So just a quick comment on that, and I do think when we see the ring fencing problem happening, what it is symptomatic that the value story isn't big enough for the whole organization. So it's one of those things where I'm very prescriptive, I suppose, in the way I do things. And I would say that if you are having that problem, it's because people are too scared of the biggest value picture that possibly could be there. And so we want to think about it more instead of, okay, is there something we have to do to augment that value picture to make it more palatable inside of the organization? Or how do we actually, you know, couple it maybe to more of the tenants inside of your organization, if there's some corporate initiatives that we need to couple something to in order to make that better? But if the ring fencing problem is there and people want to keep it very small, then it's almost not worth doing at all, right? It's almost like going on a diet for a week, right? And it's like it doesn't erase, you know, 2 years of bad eating or whatever, right? And so it's like, what's the point, right? We've done this experiment. And the reason that the people do that is because they want to experiment with the technology, but they don't actually understand what it is from a value picture that they're trying to drive. Right? So if you don't understand what you're trying to drive with a collaboration technology or a new storage technology, if you don't understand that effect that you're trying to drive, you try to restrict its effect because you don't know what you're expecting. Right? If you don't know what you're testing in your experiment, don't do the experiment. It's going to be arbitrary about that. So if you don't understand the collaboration strategy, if you don't understand why you're using this new cool thing inside of the company just because everybody else in the world is using it, don't do it, right? It's not right for you if you don't understand it.
Yeah, I think that's really good suggestion. One of the ways that I used to work with organizations to help kind of break down some of those barriers is to actually create a success plan. So really around what are you seeking to achieve? When Naomi mentioned don't do an experiment if you don't know what you're testing, very similarly, you know, what do we consider success? And then what takes us on to that wave two or phase two? So, you know, maybe it's X amount of time, and then either we're satisfied or we're not, or people are now collaborating better, or we're more efficient in one way or another. But really having that set plan, a project plan that has success criteria, and then also has the next step. So once we achieve X or Y, we'll then move on to Z.
So my question is around software is becoming a very continuous delivery model, right? We now have quarterly releases with new features. When you have 16,000 people in your enterprise, how do you try to get your arms around that? And every time there's that new iterative update, these are the new features, and how can you sustain that and make it exciting and get it out to the whole community?
Great question.
Yeah.
All right, I am a big advocate for building communities of practice inside of your organization or communities of interest. And so this continuous deployment, which is ironically one of the topics we had for this, so it's a really good question. Well done for that. So continuous improvement, continuous deployment model that we're looking at. So one of the things we need to do as IT is instead of sort of focusing on everything that changes belongs to us, understand that we actually own the service change itself, right? Just the service coming into your business and what it is that's coming in from a collaboration standpoint, or if you're using Azure services or whatever service you're trying to consume, if it's coming from Salesforce, whatever, right? Doesn't matter. So it's understanding you own that service change, but the people inside of your business have to be involved in how that change gets incorporated inside of your company. You cannot be a dam with this stuff, right? You cannot stop the tidal wave of water or the flood of water coming in. To absorb change, you have to be a sponge, which means that you have to be lots of people inside of your organization who are actually entrenched in doing this. And so whether that's the business IT partners or whether it's you go out and find the communities of interest, and you can call them whatever you makes sense inside of your company, obviously. But I mean the people who are really into business analysis, right? We have those people who geek out on Excel, right? There are lots of them, right? And we know those people inside of the company, and they don't work in IT, right? They don't work in IT at all because they're the people creating enormous models, right? And then causing problems in your SharePoint later. But you know, but those people are there. Those are the people you want to think about maybe in having a community of interest around and actually helping to absorb some of the change. Those are the folks that should be going to first release, and I'll let Brian talk about that. Maybe they have the ability to see some of those changes earlier and then actually create a community, whether you use an Office 365 group, whether you use a Yammer group, whatever it is that you want to use for that, to have a peer-to-peer community support area around that. And it's not because it's additive to your existing model, but it's really a way of dealing with this change. Because the best way to test if that change is useful to you inside of your company is to have people actually try it out, people who actually care about the change try it out. What we don't want as people, just generally, is things foisted on us, whether we wanted them or not, right? With no obligation to say, okay, is this useful or not useful, or how do I even deal with this? But if you get that person and you say, hey, you're tapped to get the new shiny stuff, right? And you know who those people are inside of your company. If you like new and shiny and they're in Excel, they'll be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get this sentiment analysis stuff like that they showed in the keynote yesterday. You'll be like, oh yeah, I really wanna test that out and figure out what's useful for my company. And then have them post about it in an Office 365 group or Yammer or wherever it is, and then share that learning with the group. And then people will help to absorb a lot of that change. Anyway, I'll let Brian talk about that.
Thank you. So my specialty being Office 365, of course, that's the examples that I like to use. But I think this applies pretty broadly, which is that there are a couple of different categories of change. So the example that you used, you know, the newest and greatest features, absolutely things that we want to encourage our users to take advantage of. We want our business teams to find out the new BI capabilities. We want our HR team to be able to see the new insights that we can provide based on how people are working together. Look at the collaboration between marketing and sales within our company. And then there's also, you know, the larger changes of we are moving from on-premises Exchange to Exchange Online, or Salesforce to Dynamics, or occasionally the other way around, of course. And the approach that we like to recommend actually differs based on the type of changes that we're talking about. So something like a UI change in Outlook on the web, that may be kind of minor. You may need to train people. The help desk should probably be aware because people will call in. When I was in college, I managed the help desk, and we got some hilarious calls. I mean, I think we could all write books about some of these things. But you know, there are also different types of users as well. So making sure that you're able to support people who struggle with change is very important. Evangelizing new capabilities. We are now rolling out a new project management system. Here's how you can go use it. Look at how much more efficient this is than simply using Excel. Or maybe Excel is the best approach to take based on your needs. But communication is absolutely key. Letting people know that something is there allows them to go use it. And the depth of the communication varies based on what you want them to achieve. So I would say it in that way, but then within Office 365 specifically, we have implemented a first release capability so that you can tag power users or those folks that like the latest and greatest. They're the evangelists within the business units. Give them the newest things first. Let them play around with it, learn the new stuff, and meet with them regularly. Let them tell you what they're finding, what they really like. And I think what Naomi was sharing is absolutely crucial, which is that cloud services do continue to evolve. I have a social network that I use in my personal life all the time, and you know, every couple of years the UI changes, everyone freaks out, and then they couldn't live without it. And change is difficult. It is. When a button moves on the screen, I find it a little bit difficult to go find it that first time. And so making sure that your users are prepared and trained and supported is absolutely crucial to their success. And you know, the example that I would use for that for kind of a real life experience is that I'm pretty familiar with the grocery store I go to all the time. If they were to move the produce from the front left to like the back right of the grocery store, I wouldn't really know what to do with myself. But if they put up a sign that just said produce is now in the back right, okay, no problem. I'll get it when I go pick up the bread. And so having those type of kind of road signs for people to be able to figure out how to achieve what they had been doing, and also helping them do it in a better way. Adopting change and even recognizing it is often easiest when the new solution is easier to use or better than the previous one. So that's something that we've actually found within Microsoft is that many times when we roll out a new capability, we will communicate it when it's necessary. We have a new policy that you know all must be submitted by X date. Or if we're rolling out Office 365 groups, in that case, we actually didn't communicate it broadly. Some people knew about it. The IT team, of course, knew about it. Some of our power users knew. Within the Office 365 department, we were a little bit biased, so we knew. But in general, it was kind of just made of, and then our power users started to use them. We created some groups. We invited others. They said, oh, look how cool this is. I can now invite other people. Other people started creating groups, and all of a sudden, we had this pretty organic community, very similar to Yammer, where you start having some of those important conversations. People are drawn in. And so some of it is adopting the change and kind of adapting to this iterative evolution, which often happens kind of in a UI. And then some of it is enabling people to use the new capabilities and showing them just why it's better than what they had been doing.
And I guess the other thing is that I want to convey that everything is all rainbows and butterflies, too. We understand that there are things that are going to come out that your users just aren't happy with. And that's okay. But I think, again, going back to what Brian was saying, is that we do live in an age now where things can be iterative. I think the other thing to consider is that, especially from a Yammer perspective, we don't make changes just to make changes for the heck of it. We do a lot of A-B testing and understanding of user behavior to understand what is actually working, what does engage people into the product. So it's we're very mindful about the changes that we make, and we do try to be very transparent about why those changes are happening. That said, we're always open to making sure we understand what really is working in the field and adjusting as we can. I think that's the power of how enterprise software is shifting from the way it used to be to what it is today. But thank you for that question.
Yes. Yep, you can come to the mic. Thanks.
So, in terms of FastWorks itself, how do you combat MVPs from becoming a production offering that doesn't stagnate? So you have people that are excited about technology, and you got the adopters, the green dots, you know, they're just evangelists, and they go out there and say, oh, this is great. In smaller companies, it may be a little managed, and that's an assumption, but on bigger companies, you have, you know, the 95% of the people that are, you know, I just got on email, right? You know, it's like, I don't want to do anything else. And so how do you socialize the change from an existing MVP from becoming a stagnant and complete product?
Okay, that's a great question, because that happens all the time, right? It becomes the access database becomes production, right? Mm-hmm. The minimal viable product for whatever it is that we're doing becomes the production system very quickly. And so what I would recommend with that, again, is making sure that value story is there, and then we're applying those value stories and what's appropriate from a metrics perspective around what it's going to deliver. So the first thing is when you build that minimum viable product, you want to communicate it is a minimum viable product. But we want to make sure of what does success look like for that MVP for you. So it's, okay, understanding it's this criteria. We've got these, you know, however many signups or whatever it is on the system itself. We've got this kind of throughput on the system, those things. What does it scale to the next level? Because we want to make sure that that scaling of the next level is when we can invite other people to start using on that issue. But if we don't have those success metrics, because they're going to change at every step that we roll out to production, right? So we're scaling up. The problem is when we happens is we say, okay, we do this initial invitation to everybody for the minimum viable product, but then we're like stuck with, okay, we can't scale up what it is, whether it's an access database or a power app or whatever it is that you might have just
becomes
a bit, you know,
too
becomes,
well used,
right,
and then
exactly.
It,
becomes the way we do it. Yep. So we have to make sure at the beginning, right? Again, this is another thing. If you're going to do the experiment and you don't know what for, don't do the experiment, right? A lot of times we just build something and see if they come, right? And we all know it doesn't work, and yet sometimes it does, right? Sometimes it really does work. Pokemon and you're like, crap, yeah, you're like Pokemon Go. Exactly. So, but if you have that problem, if you have rogue access databases or a rogue Excel spreadsheet becomes the entire business system for whatever, right? And it does happen, right? And when that does happen, the issue there is we haven't made that value story correct at the beginning for what that minimum viable product should have looked like. If we don't, again, have those phases attached, if we don't have success metrics that are appropriate to each phase attached, then we will never understand why we have to scale that up to be the next thing. And again, implementation problems. Don't test experiments we don't know what the answer is going to be for.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm curious what you all think and others think about this. Building in some exclusivity into the rollout too, I've seen be kind of a successful approach too, is kind of going back to the approach. So you kind of, you know, you have a group that's testing things out and trying things out, then you're building excitement, then you get other people that kind of maybe build up a sign up of sorts, that people can start to, you can start to gauge interest in, you know, whether the solution is going to create value for other people. So, you know, think about that.
Thanks, Steve. So I think you've done a great job on talking about managing change from a people perspective. And I started to hear a little bit from a process perspective. I think there's a lot of us in the room right now that might be more prone to process. And we'd like to hear about some of those techniques you might like to share.
I think this is kind of a process, and it is kind of a process at an individual level. So back in November or so last year, I started to really get into understanding habits of people. And after I started, had anybody read the book The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg? Yeah. After reading that book, I started to see everything around me as a habit. I started watching other people and seeing habits in other people. The problem to me with the book was that it taught me kind of the science of habits, but I didn't really feel like I got out of it how to change a habit or how to create a new habit. So I started to explore a little bit further, and I came across a Stanford professor. His name is BJ Fogg. He has a method. Anybody heard of tiny habits? Okay. Yeah. So if you do a of course, Diane would know Tiny Habits. If you just do a search on Tiny Habits, he has a 17-minute TED Talk where he talks about kind of this framework for Tiny Habits. And really what it is it's breaking down how to create new behaviors in people by breaking them down to their smallest element. And it's probably not kind of a earth-shattering concept, but really, as I started to explore this with BJ Fogg, we started to think about, all right, how do we start to incorporate this tiny habits method into the ways that people can be, as a way for people to be more productive, as a way for people to adopt new technology? Because a lot of what we found was that people just have gotten so ingrained in their old ways of working. We did a lot of interviews to understand what people think of productivity and what they think of how they're productive. And we'd hear a lot of things from people saying, like, I'm still managing email the same way I was 10 years ago from the way my previous boss taught me. Or I still do meetings the same way because I've always done it. People haven't really taken the step to really pause and think about, is there a different way for me to do it? And if there is, how should I do it? So now I've identified the way to do it, but now it's like I'm gonna decide to lose weight. It's like, oh gosh, I gotta lose 20, 30, 50, how am I gonna do that? So now we break habit. So let's say we want people to, an example in a work environment is, well, first I'll take a personal example. The way that I started using Tiny Habits was kind of this classic example that BJ uses is around doing push-ups. So after I brush my teeth, I will do 2 push-ups. So what you do is you anchor in something that you don't create a new anchor. I brush my teeth every day, actually a couple times a day because I'm weird about that. And then, so after I brush my teeth, I get down on the ground, I do 2 push-ups. And then the key thing after that, this might sound kind of cheesy to some of you, I celebrate. So I do this self-celebration. So I get down, do 2 push-ups, I get up, I say, yes, I'm awesome. And what that does, it sounds cheesy, but what that does is I'm creating this, yeah, I've done this new behavior, and I've got to anchor it, I've got to create a connection in my mind that I did something positive. So every time I do it, that's what I do. And then over time, if I, maybe one day I do 3 push-ups or I do 4 push-ups, that's kind of extra credit. And then maybe while I start building up and I do more push-ups. So in a work environment, how could this work? So a lot of times people are in meetings, right? And they're like, waste of time, no agenda, people don't, they don't plan correctly for it. What I started to do with my meetings was, after I create a new meeting invite, I skip all the topic line. I go right to the body and I write objective. So after I create a meeting, I will write 1 objective. That's what I do. So I write objective, colon, and then 1 sentence about what the meeting is about. So when people are getting this message, it's not just the Skype information, it's, hey, what am I supposed to be at this meeting for? So think about, if we started to create this program around Tiny Habits for Productivity, and we started to brainstorm, like, what are all these little things that people could start doing? Happy to have conversations with you about that, but I think, like I said, breaking things down into their smallest elements, attaching them to behaviors that people already do, to me, that's been a sustainable way to create change for myself and for other teams.
Just to add on to that, if you're an organization that has things that are already built into sort of the fabric of your company, for example, I work a lot in process manufacturing areas, and so oftentimes they'll have things like safety moments before a meeting. It's like just part of the organizational, you know, we all have this 4 or more people in the room, right? Attach a habit to those things, like who's going to open the shared OneNote, right? To have all of us take, you know, agenda items in there, right? Or who's going to, you know, create the Office 365 group as part of our project management methodology, right? Attach those existing habits, the new behavior that you are trying to drive inside of to the things that you already do as a well-established process inside of the company. It sounds really obvious, and yet it works, right? It actually works because if you can build it into what you're already doing, you basically insert it. It's kind of like a virus in DNA, right? You're basically inserting it in there and making it part of the fabric of what your company does.
So my perspective is very similar, but I would take it from kind of the, maybe an ITIL type of an approach where what I would always recommend with different organizations of various sizes and, you know, a very small organization, it might be as simple as saying, today we're now using OneNote, stop using those Word documents. But within a large, it's really hard to get the message out to 16,000 people. And so what we saw very successful with a number of organizations, and this isn't quite how Microsoft approaches it, but within many customers that I worked with, we had a change advisory board. We would meet once a week, maybe once a month, and traditionally what they were used to doing in pill-based was, what are we changing this week? What is coming up? What are we releasing? We're okay, we're deploying cumulative update 6 to Exchange 2010. Has that been tested in pre-production? Yes, no, did anything break? But then we started to shift those really around the cloud model where we weren't doing the cumulative update deployments, Microsoft was. We are, well, line of business apps might be changing, but rather than talking about what are we changing in the technology, it was what behaviors do we want to change? What new features, what new functionality, new applications do we want people to start using? And so on a monthly basis, we would look at here are the top 3 things we want people to know about, and communication was key. If people didn't know about it, they couldn't start using it. And so many of these organizations would have a big intranet home site that would be everyone's homepage, and we'd start putting things there. Hey, look at how Bob in accounting is using Power BI to meet all of his objectives, and he can share out these awesome dashboards now. And so we would have communications through intranet, a little bit maybe more passive, and then we would all emails, and that was a little bit more traditional around on Friday night, we're going to be doing an upgrade. You won't have email from 9 to 10 p.m. But then as we started adopting more and more cloud services, the maintenance windows went away, and it was more along the lines of, you know, we now have access to a new project management system. Go check it out here. And so some of these emails start to seed the ideas, but then also we would really, you know, back to the idea of the power users or these early adopters, we would really train some people that would then demonstrate the power. And by communicating and demonstrating and then building in the habits and building in, you know, what organization do, what is part of our DNA, so the safety moments for maybe a chemical company, how do we approach this from the way that we do work and tie all of the communications back to that? But having that regular rhythm and really communication, but then also paying attention to what is upcoming in these new services. You know, look at the roadmap. We do publish roadmaps, Microsoft does. I know Google, Amazon, all of the companies, they publish roadmaps and they do a pretty good job communicating what's upcoming. And so we would take a look at that in our change advisory boards. And we looked across technology, although, you know, we're biased, but we looked across technology and it was, what do we really want to drive this month? And how do we want to communicate? And so our change advisory board really shifted a bit from, are we testing changes, to what behaviors do we want to drive in the organization? And we became more and more of kind of a communication and enablement, a business enablement group is really, really how we thought about it.
Thanks, guys. We're actually time.
Can I share one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
One thing I'd love to see, I'll make it quick. One thing I'd love to see, I think, is that, so you think about sports teams, whether it's a soccer team or a football team, they practice an entire week before they get on the pitch or they get on the field for their big performance. As teams in our organizations, though, we're kind of thrown together as a project team and we're like just sent off to the wolves and said, go, like implement, go do whatever you need. But we don't really take the time as a team to practice, I think, the way that teams should practice. So what I'd love to see is if you're on a year-long project, take the time as a team to spend a relative amount of time to practice as a team. How are we going to run meetings? How are we going to communicate with each other? Get everybody aligned so that they can get the thinking out of the head about how they're going to do those things and make those things rote. So I'd love to see people practice as a team before they get kind of thrown into actually live production.
Thank you so much. And before we go, we wanted to talk a little bit about some resources. So I know, yeah.
So just a few I wanted to share there. Obviously, the Fast Track Center, I know that we've been talking about that a lot during the different sessions today and yesterday. So the Fast Track service is there, and it's available to everybody, basically. So if you're looking for adoption resources, migration resources, especially in the Office 365 area, but a lot of the communication methodology is also very useful, and you can actually build a custom change plan as part of that. And then first release, just to learn more about that in terms of Office 365, because there are several options there. Obviously, you can talk to Brian afterwards about that, too, because he's the man. But first release is basically a great way to be able to control that inside of your Office 365 and roll it out to different power users and make that adoption curve between the services you're consuming in the cloud as well as the first release, the deferred channel, current channel you have for your Office desktop applications, which is a whole other set of changes that you have to manage, and that's much more horrendous for users, right? So we want to do that. And I put my blog up there, Arbitrary and Capricious. I have a lot of stuff out there too. And this thing.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time and enjoy the show.